Welcome to the Experts in Sport podcast, brought to you by Loughborough University. This podcast seeks to bring together the worlds of academia and professional practice. If you're interested in the latest research and trends in sport, then this is the podcast for you. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Emily Cartini and Simon Womwell, and we're going to discuss athletes and dual careers. Emily's PhD focused on dual career athletes. She's now a research associate for the Talented Athlete Scholarship Scheme, or TAS as it's better known. They're responsible for the England Talent Pathway and have supported athletes that have gone on to win nearly 200 Olympic and Paralympic medals. Simon is the Education and Development Manager at Loughborough University and previous dual career athlete. He's responsible for creating the best possible dual career environment at Loughborough. He's a member of the TAS National Lifestyle Advisory Group and has been involved in the Erasmus Plus research project, Gold in Education and Elite Sport. Hi, Emily. Hi, Simon. Welcome to the podcast. Good to have you on.
Hi, Martin.
Hi, Martin. Thanks for having us.
That's okay. So today we're going to look at dual career athletes. And we know that during lockdown, there's been a number of athletes starting education. It'd be interesting to learn about the support you've been given and the extra things going on during lockdown and also generally. But just to start with, can we just have a brief explanation of what a dual career athlete is?
So dual career, the idea is that athletes have something outside of their athletic career alongside that pursuit within sport. So that could be a kind of formal education. The one we normally think of is them doing a university degree alongside aiming to be an elite athlete. But it could also be a kind of MVQ, BTEC, any kind of qualification. It could also be a vocation. So if they're not funded or they're not professional athletes, they might have to maintain some kind of work alongside their elite athlete career to be able to kind of financially sustain themselves through that.
Okay, and I know there's a controversy around dual career a little bit in terms of the pros and cons, and some people would say just stick to one thing and go for it, and the education in that sense comes back of the queue. So what would we say about that? What are the pros and cons of going for a dual career?
I think there's two main benefits. The first one kind of comes out of the transition literature in terms of athletic retirement. So what we know for athletes is that retirement, their athletic retirement, is inevitable. And what we also know is that can be really challenging for athletes in terms of all of a sudden, you know, they've got extra time that's not no longer filled with sport. That support network for them might not be as prominent in their life. Also, all of their goals that they had towards sport, all of a sudden they don't have those anymore. So what we see is that if they prepare for that early via a dual career or via education or training, is that that can actually ease that retirement for them, so that if they develop those interests outside of sport, they can then kind of more smoothly transition into that in their retirement. And hopefully that retirement comes for them at the end, you know, at the age of 35, after a really successful sporting career. But the reality is that it could come any day in terms of deselection. It could come tomorrow in terms of a career ending injury, or if we're thinking about disability athletes, declassification as well. One of the other benefits is thinking about the benefit for them right now. And what we're starting to see is more evidence towards this idea that dual career helps with the well-being of athletes and in turn, therefore, their performance. So what we understand is that having an exclusively athletic identity can be very fragile. So as a cyclist, the way I kind of like to, the analogy I like to use is kind of wheels on a bike. So if you think of a unicycle, if you've ever tried to ride one, it's quite difficult to stay to kind of stand up.
And if someone tried to ride one,
yeah, I've tried and I failed. Yes, and if someone kind of came along and gave you a push from the side, you'd probably fall off. Two wheels is a little bit more stable, but still, if someone kind of came along and gave you a big nudge from the side, you would still probably fall to the side. Three wheels, you know, you're kind of not going anywhere. So if you think about those wheels as identities of parts of yourself, you can kind of see that one wheel, that one athletic identity can be quite unstable. But if we diversify that, it's much more stable for that athlete.
Have you got experience of that as well, Simon?
Yeah, I mean, so from my side on the practical element, seeing people's journeys over the last few years and how situations have changed, I think if building on what Emily said, if we look at sort of planned and unplanned transitions, sort of normative, non-normative, we can look at quite a fixed journey at Loughborough. So we look at a support developing power sort of approach across their journey here. So normally 3 years, perhaps a little bit more. But equally within that whole process, if we come to our current situation with COVID-19, people's ability to adapt, people's ability to be more growth-minded, I think comes back to enhancing performance, enhancing them as individuals. And ultimately, that presents dual career as a positive because of the transferability generally. We work with developing people. We don't work with developing a person in a particular pocket. Yes, they may excel in sport. They may excel academically. They may excel in a whole range of things. But pulling that all together, we would hope each will enhance the other. And I think there's a greater understanding of that, as Emily said, and some of the sort of perhaps David Laverley's work more recently has more explicitly found that is aiding sporting performance. And I think that's where we then gain greater buy-in from the athletes and some of the coaches that maybe aren't quite so on board with dual career, perhaps.
I think that's interesting because I certainly think in the last couple of years, if you've kept an eye on the Premiership, there's been a lot more professional players talking about it's not all about football and different things that they do outside of football. I know Vincent Kompany, for instance, has just completed his MBA a couple of years ago. And I know that's towards the end of his career. But other athletes talking about, I play the guitar, or, you know, just having other interests instead of just being a footballer. You mentioned lockdown. So we're in lockdown at the moment. And I know there was a few reports, there's a BBC report from Ben Croucher that mentioned there's been an increase in athletes doing more education. So we could touch upon that, but also what's changed in terms of the support that you've been giving athletes during this time?
So from TAS, so all of our athletes are in education, all the athletes we support are currently in an education. So obviously all of that has had to go onto remote delivery. And the package that we provide athletes kind of includes S&C, physio, nutrition, lifestyle, psychology. So all of that has had to go to remote delivery. But I think athletes have coped really well with it, and having that education is they've been able to use that to focus during lockdown. So when they haven't kind of had that sport to focus on, they've been able to just get ahead a little bit within their education and focus on that during this time.
Have you found the same thing, Simon?
Yeah, so I think if we take a cup half full approach to it, I think the timing of lockdown fell quite nicely in the university year for our cohort. So they'd largely transitioned into Loughborough if they're in their first year bracket. They had formed the houses they were living in. They'd formed their sort of support network in that sense and gained a full understanding perhaps of what their academic requirements were and their sporting balance was going to look like. I think for those that hadn't, it accelerated that. So we talk about point of realization and that kind of thing. I think some of those who were struggling or maybe didn't quite see the value of their education, perhaps because of experience they'd had in the past or something, it was a little jump to actually I do need to be looking quite honestly at a dual aspect or an holistic aspect of my development. As far as what we're doing to support those people, certainly remaining individualised wherever possible. So again, the Zoom call or the Teams call structure lends itself to keeping that flow going. With our TAS athletes we support, we would continue to do that wherever possible. Try not to overload them. So I think there's been a want across different areas of the sector, and you see so many different articles on LinkedIn or whatever it might be covering topics to help people, kind of saying the same thing. Trying to avoid bombarding them with that, and again trying to keep it individual. We did a 6-week topic intervention at the start of lockdown when I think people felt a little bit uncertain and anxious, or to a greater extent, where we covered sort of actually LinkedIn as an initial week, so creating their profile if they didn't have one, improving it if they did. Second one was sort of optimizing their environment, just promoting areas of thought across those 6 weeks that could then lead into some of the individual meetings too. We also joined into a university-wide telephoning campaign at the start of May, where I think over 40 performance sports staff were coordinated contacting everyone and having a phone call catch-up. So it just made sure no one had been left out or forgotten in any way. And that's something that was, again, sort of a university-wide initiative. So that was sort of, 500 people in the region of that received a one-to-one phone call, how things are, how are you settling in. So after that initial lockdown phase, now prepping for exams, focusing in academically, how are things going on?
It seems like a nice, sensible approach to making sure the individual is okay and individualising things around the individual. Have things changed during lockdown in terms of the general support? And what do you do normally?
So I speak a little bit from the performance lifestyle development side and then a little bit from the wider Loughborough sports side. As Emily said, clearly a huge amount has gone to remote and tried to maintain things where possible. But I think trying to look at where we can take advantage and enhance those things too. So obviously distance hasn't become a barrier in what we're doing at the moment. Talking and attending things in Australia in the same way as I am attending things with colleagues back at Loughborough, one road away, perhaps in their house. So, and the same with how we approach the athletes. It's maybe lending itself to a more regular, shorter catch up rather than saying, right, let's take 20 minutes to try and schedule when we're going to sit down and have an effective hour or something, and just sort of drip feed along. And just as the situation changes, making sure we're up to date and aware of what's going on in their lives, what they want to see changing. I've felt people have become slightly more aware of what fulfillment is for them, and an individual understanding as we work with a developing age bracket of what they maybe want to be doing a little bit more, how that transitions back, whether they want to transition back, whether their path changes a little bit, ultimately trying to make sure they're best informed of options around them.
Yeah. I mean, I'd agree. Kind of all our deliveries been happening in the same way, just kind of remotely. But I'd agree with kind of what Simon's saying, is that emphasis on psychology and lifestyle, I think, has been heightened during this period. And, there's been a few reports I've seen. I think FIFPro did some stats on mental health, and they're kind of saying the symptoms of depression within their athletes had, the reports of those symptoms had doubled. And the NCAA as well did a survey of athletes and kind of found similar, that reports of mental health issues had doubled in this time. So really the focus needs to be those aspects of support of psychology and lifestyle.
It's like Simon said, it's that wider thing. That phone call seems really important, that everybody just had a phone call to know somebody's looking out for them. I think that's a really nice way of doing things and making sure everyone's okay. And it's just caring about your athletes. Simon, you mentioned transition, and I think this is a really key and interesting topic to look at in terms of athletes moving onto campus or moving from where they've been previously. So as we've chatted about before, I was the head of education in a football club, and we had all of our players living on campus together. And they certainly found it difficult when they first got there, because they were 16-year-olds. They'd all been the superstar in their, in their club, in their school. All of a sudden, they're moving on to a facility where they might not be the superstar anymore. And all their mates think so-and-so is going to make it as a professional. And then they come into this environment, all of a sudden they realise, wow, I might not be the best anymore. Really tough in that football environment for them to survive. And we try to create an environment where they could survive and hopefully thrive. It'd be interesting to hear from both of you in regards to what you do to ensure that transition is as smooth as possible.
Yeah, so I mean, talking on a practical sense, trying to use a cross-sport approach where we can, which is where I try to come in around our induction process. We do an induction day or two where we have as many of the performance athletes that are starting at Loughborough that will come together, spend the morning doing some sort of classic team-building exercises, but split down so they're not purely with their sporting cohort. Some of the sports have inevitably been in for a little while, thinking of football season starting very early and the swimmers and the athletes maybe coming a bit later. So that's normally about 100, 150 people. And then move into the afternoon where we'll try and do things a little bit more in their academic group. So they're forming more of a network. If they're studying geography, they're going to be with a performance rugby player, performance hockey player, performance athlete studying geography. So when they flow into a lecture of 200 people or would have done last year, they'll immediately have a bit of a connection, a bit of reassurance, and people who have shared challenges to share whilst they're at Loughborough and hopefully overcome some of those. I think as far as that transition in, if I sort of split it into environment and people, I think that maybe works quite well. So we look at the environmental aspect before they're here. We have the elite athlete block. If we start at the basis of the pyramid, they can choose to live in an elite athlete space where they're going to have people who are like-minded in that sense, or they may choose to go into different accommodation where it can be catered or self-catered to build a broader network. And we know with over 6,000 students who are members of the gyms at Loughborough that there's a sport and ethos flowing through the whole campus, whether they choose to live with a group who are pulled out as performance program members or not, and a balance of lifestyle ultimately on how they want to live at Loughborough. The challenge is, as you say, is I think the self-reflective bit of people knowing what they want when they're transitioning in and whether they've been effectively informed beforehand of what's available and what the options are, and that things can be moved and changed if necessary, and we can be adaptable and agile in that sense. I think if we look at the people having joined up messaging on that, the worst case scenarios for me, talking of information before they get here, is when we have open days and seen it too readily, where people have perhaps been misinformed to the extent of what they need to be studying to be able to come and study at Loughborough. We have a number of different routes for athletes coming in, including the Elite Athlete Foundation, which is there for people who have not had the opportunity to perhaps demonstrate their academic ability because they've not found that dual career balance or had the right mentoring or advice at that point. But yeah, always a shame when you see someone who, yeah, wants to join our environment but maybe hasn't quite got the skill set and needs to take a step back for a year and then try again perhaps.
It happens a lot with what qualification they're doing. I found it challenging that all footballers had to do a certain qualification. I know things have changed at some places a little bit, but them all having to do a BTEC in football, well, in sport, was difficult for me as a head of education to allow that to happen, but it was the only thing that could happen with the apprenticeship schemes. At Loughborough and for TAS athletes, Emily, what education are students allowed to do? Is it open to all types of education?
Yeah, so we're mainly focused at the FE and the HE level. But what we can do is, because we've got so many diverse sites, you know, there's kind of 30 universities there, is that it allows athletes to select the university that offers them the course they want to study. Because I think what tends to happen a lot of the time is athletes, if someone's interested in, if an athlete is interested in doing a degree, they tend to go, oh, well, I'll just do sport or sport coaching because kind of that's the thing that they know. So at TAS, what we really try and encourage is to provide the full range of courses to make those available to athletes so that they can understand what their interests are outside of sport, what career they want to go down after their athletic career. And they can then select the universities that offer that course and offer them their sport alongside that. So, you know, coaching, not to kind of be negative about coaching, that's perfectly acceptable if the athlete themselves want to go down that as a career, but it's complete waste of time for an athlete doing a degree in coaching, for example, if they don't want to be a coach after their athletic career. So it's much more about individual solutions tailored to what the athlete wants to do outside of sport and after sport.
Yeah, and again, now, you know, that was my point with the BTEC. I mean, you know, there's a lot of them who do want to do it, but there's a lot who don't. There's some who aren't capable of doing it at certain levels. But it's interesting that you try and provide athletes with the choice that suits them best. Simon, I know you manage, you know, around a lot of athletes. How does that work with timetabling and the being able to actually get to courses and how do you support them around that?
Absolutely key question, isn't it, really? If we're looking at a dual career, the balance has got to be right. And I think that's where, if we speak to some of the elite coaches who are still concerned about people taking on a dual career, it's generally around the fact that it's going to impact too much on their ability to train or something like that. I would come back to, if someone's genuinely driven to do both, they've found that subject that they're passionate about, they want to be part of a world-class environment and thrive with others around them that want to do the same, we will work as hard as we can to make sure it works effectively in an individualised way. So yes, there are underpinning policies. So we have assessment flexibility policy. So ultimately across any programme at the university, we will look to move their assessments to an appropriate point, normally possibly sitting it remotely or sitting it later on in the summer, or different options to suit particular goals. If it's their first international cap in January that clashes with the exam results, we look at options there. If they're targeting the Olympic Games, it may be that we look at module adjustments or loading particular points in the year. This year has been a huge challenge in that sense, where people have perhaps loaded up the year after the Olympics, and with the Olympics now changing, tried to flip that where possible. So there's been additional modules picked up in this summer, so people, when they have more time, can load that up and vice versa. Stretch degrees, so I'll touch on that. So within the assessment flexibility element, stretch degrees is critical. If there's going to be flexibility to move numbers of credits around and have key pinch points avoided in the years, taking on a degree that's full-time for 3 years, particularly in a subject that's maybe quite intense with teaching, can be really challenging. So people being aware they can stretch that is important.
And is that what you see across the board with TAS athletes, Emily?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think every kind of environment has their own kind of structures and support mechanisms. But what we would try and encourage is that kind of openness for flexibility for dual careers. And I think what TAS can do is they can sit sort of in between the sport and the education and kind of can be that communication bridge between the two. So to communicate the benefits of dual career to the sport and the importance of flexibility, a little bit of flexibility from them and vice versa with the education. So it's kind of a triangulation there to get the support that the athlete needs.
I think that's a really key point about making sure the coaches understand the importance of the career and the education, not only for the athlete moving forward. You've mentioned that already, they might get injured tomorrow and it's about that person, but also I think sometimes to win that coach on board, making sure they understand that actually the education may enhance them in their performance as well. And whether that's just through it being something to take their mind away from the stress of performance. I had a situation with the academy manager who was phenomenal. We had huge support from him for education. And we had a couple of students who, all right, it was a Friday afternoon. It was an anatomy and physiology session, but they messed about a little bit. And one of my teachers didn't get a one from Ofsted. So Ofsted were there 10 years teaching. He got a one every single time. So an outstanding lesson. The assessor said to him, look, I can see that was an outstanding, but there was two guys. I know you challenged them. I know you tried to get them engaged, but they didn't engage. And therefore, I can only give you a good. I mean, he was gutted. But this was a Friday night. The academy manager found out about this. The next day, they were playing top of the league, local rival clash. He dropped the two players who happened to be two starting 11 players. From that moment on, students were engaged, and we knew we had the understanding from the coach that he knew how important education was. And that kind of fed into the players. And at a 16-year-old, it's sometimes difficult to have that. It might be slightly different at 18 and as people are getting older to understand that the education and the sport are both really, really important. But I think having a coach on board was a huge benefit for us. Have you found that, Simon, with coaches? Are they all on board with you, or do you sometimes struggle?
Internally and externally, it still certainly varies. I mean, over the past 6 years, the position has definitely improved. Internally and externally, sort of the understanding and benefits of that dual career. And also, being fair, from our end, we've become more adaptable and aware of the fact that we want to support these elite athletes in having an effective balance. I think, just building on what you were saying there, I think with our age bracket, we would hope it's working towards that sort of empowered opt-in. We wouldn't take what I understand to be more of an American approach of, if they're not hitting the grade point average, they're not training or they're not attending. We've done it occasionally, but generally with the cohort where we're seeing graduate stats of 2-1 and above percentages at or above the wider university average, we think we're reaching that. Okay, they're coming in with a fairly good growth mindset at Loughborough because of the level of people we're receiving or fortunate to receive. But for those who perhaps aren't, or for those that maybe have different impacts on the journey, working towards that, them understanding the value of this and how it's enhancing their sport, coaches and athletes.
We've talked about how dual career, it can benefit everybody. And I think we've talked broadly around the support that's required to make sure athletes are supported and are performing well, both in their career in sport and their education. What can other people do? So what can national governing bodies do? What can professional clubs do to enhance this and keep this kind of going?
I think it's a discussion for kind of athletes to be having and NGBs to be having of how they can carry this on. So if athletes have engaged with this and found it beneficial during lockdown, it's now a conversation we need to be having of how can we carry this on when sport starts to return. I think what, you know, we've talked a lot, we did focus on a kind of higher education. I think sport could also be looking at what connections we have outside of that, to kind of, like you say, offer the full range of education, but also vocation as well. So those links with employers to be able to set up those support mechanisms. From a research side as well, I think that us as researchers need to be better at communicating our research findings so that all of these things we find that work best can be kind of delivered on the ground at the NGB level and at different universities or education sites. So one of the kind of focuses we have at TAS and the dual career research group that we've set up is to get the questions that are most important from sport in terms of dual career and lifestyle and athlete welfare, research those, and then to then deliver those back to the sports so that they can use it in practice.
So what are those key things that you've found that are coming out that need to be delivered?
So I think we've touched on quite a few. So this kind of holistic approach, what I mean is that, so are the education's on board, the sports on board, also the athletes' private kind of support networks on board, and facilitating communication between all of those three. So we did a big body of research. It was an Erasmus Plus project. TAS was a partner as well, and 7 other countries across Europe to find the kind of key features of environments that make them successful. So some of them were kind of structural things of having a designated dual career support team in place to support athletes and be that point of contact for athletes. But other things was that more the kind of culture of those environments as well, of the willingness to be flexible to dual careers, the understanding of the benefits of dual careers, but also the issues and the challenges, and also empowering athletes to do this for themselves and kind of taking self-responsibility for this themselves.
Yeah, no, really interesting to listen to Emily's perspective too. I think coming back to your direct question, ultimately, I think it's allowing athletes to be empowered to find some of their own journeys and demonstrate through positive examples back into those sports the impact that's had on them and, as such, athletic performance. I mean, coming back to the situation we're in now, I'm very sure that we talk about our athletes performing well academically and outperforming our general cohort by a little bit. I think this year we will see that spike a little bit because they've had more time to have on their academics than they would have had naturally, but also just because their ability to be adaptable and transfer, and we see that in all directions. It's just very, very hard to quantify, isn't it? Because we're talking about that whole person. Yeah, I think if we look at that transferability, we just started a partnership with a company called Advicta, looking at transfers out and focusing on how we better support our athletes in that end of the journey, and providing some reassurance there's still opportunities at the moment and excellent job roles are coming up and being secured is something that we're not seeing. So coming back to what sports can be doing, I think providing some of that reassurance around how what athletes are doing at home is enhancing them and enhancing performance, I think is really important. And yeah, building on what Emily was saying there, sort of the European research, one or two bits I've been involved with it, I think defining sort of the competencies and what works for athletes and what works in sports settings and as researchers and practitioners is now quite well covered from my perspective. I think beyond that, the how it's then implemented is the real challenge. So in a particular environment, how we tailor it to suit individuals and those environments is the challenge from a lifestyle and psychological perspective that we need to overcome. And that demonstrating value has got to come through the sports.
I think you've made some great points, guys. I think the empowering of the athletes and making sure it's a course that's for them, I think, is a key thing that's come through for you guys. Supporting them holistically around not just their course, but supporting them psychologically, I think, is a huge thing you've put together there. And then the flexibility around the sport, the athlete and the education, I think these are the key messages that you guys have put across. One interesting thing I think that you've just touched upon at the end is those next steps, because it seems like probably time for this on a further podcast, those next steps into employment, because many of these athletes are certainly thinking, I'm going to be professional, I'm going to make it in this direction. But we all know that the numbers who make that are very small. I think those steps into employment and getting that happening earlier, not just, you know, sorry for the term, but when you've been bombed, you know, oh, now I've got to think about something else. Having that part of the journey, I think that's a real key thing that could be added to a lot of education. Are you doing that? Is that happening?
I'd absolutely agree with what you're saying. And I think we are now quite good at doing this in terms of getting athletes through a degree. So we're quite good at getting them the education that they might need. What we're maybe not as good at is thinking about those vocational skills. So what we tend to find is that athletes that maybe when they come to athletic retirement, they go into kind of job interviews and they say, you know, I've got a degree, but they're going up against other candidates who have got a degree, they've got a few years work experience within the career that they're going for, you know, they've done voluntary work or all those added extras that the athlete just wasn't able to do. So they're kind of competing with that. So I think we need to think about how else can we support athletes to carry that on past just getting the right education for the career that they need. Also thinking about, can they get work experience in those relevant areas just to make that transition into the career that they want that little bit easier.
I think that's a real key point to leave it on. And I think we could definitely touch upon that more, but in terms of clubs, NGBs, education providers, I think it looks like we're doing a lot of good stuff, and it's certainly improved over the past, you know, 5 or 10 years in terms of what's being provided and athletes buying into education. But I think there is some work to do on that next step into career. Thank you very much. Appreciate the time.
Brilliant. Thanks, Martin.
All right. Martin.
Thanks for listening to the Experts in Sport podcast. See you next time.